one big idea to help the housing market gets nixed.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning, I'm Jeremy Hobson. A federal housing regulator is rejecting a White House plan to help borrowers who are underwater on their mortgages. That means they owe more than their homes are worth, and there are about 11 million people in that category. The Federal Housing Finance Agency says the potential benefits of cutting mortgage balances for those people don't outweigh the costs. Marketplace's Amy Scott joins us live with more on this story. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Amy, remind us, first of all, who this regulator is and what this decision means.
The FHFA regulates Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two government-run mortgage finance companies. And its chief, Edward DeMarco, has been under a lot of pressure from the Obama administration, which wants Fannie and Freddie to reduce the principal on a lot of those underwater mortgages rather than just cutting monthly payments. But yesterday, DeMarco said the potential benefits are just too small to justify the risks.
Well, what are the risks that he's worried about?
Well, Jeremy, remember that term moral hazard?
Sure.
That came up a lot in the financial crisis. Stan Humphries is chief economist at Zillow, and he says, you know, private lenders can and are doing this on a case-by-case basis, but Fannie and Freddie are government-sponsored entities, and they would have to be a lot more uniform about it.
You would then have to have an established set of guidelines that if you qualified for this program, you're going to get some principal reduction, which is then going to possibly create more incentives for people to become delinquent on their mortgages.
Now, of course, the Obama administration isn't happy with this decision. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner sent DeMarco a strongly worded letter criticizing the decision. But, you know, he isn't alone. Humphries says that Zillow did a poll of economists. Most of them agreed that large-scale principal reduction wasn't a good idea.
Marketplace's Amy Scott, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Well, the power is coming back on this morning in India after yesterday's huge blackout that left more than 600 million people in the dark. It was the second outage in 2 days and is blamed in part on rising demand for electricity in one of the world's fastest growing economies. But in another one of the world's fastest growing economies, China, a blackout like this would be unthinkable. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz explains.
If, and that's a very big if, half of China suddenly lost power, what would happen to the official in charge of the national power grid? Sean Ryan, author of The End of Cheap China and head of China Market Research, has a guess.
He probably would be arrested and put under investigation for corruption and might be demoted at the very least within the party.
In India, on the other hand, the prime minister rewarded the head of the country's crippled power grid with a promotion. On paper, the demographics of India and China may look the same, but not on the ground.
Part of the issue is that Chinese are not willing to accept problems with infrastructure. You know, they're much more likely to protest than many Indians would. I think Indians are more used to many of the brownouts because they happen on an ongoing, regular basis anyway.
More and more companies are looking beyond India when it comes to where they want to build their next factory. Both India and China are relatively poor countries with long traditions of corruption. But, says Ryan, China's Communist Party lives in constant fear that if it doesn't please the people will revolt. In democratic India, people can vent with a vote. Problem is, almost always, the new boss is the same as the old boss. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up 0.33% right now in London, down 0.6% in Tokyo. The Fed will wrap up its meeting today in Washington and we'll find out if any new stimulus is on the way. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 64 points to close at 13,008.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
There's more sun and heat in the forecast for St. Louis, which is not great for a region that's in the midst of the worst drought in decades. Now, we've heard about the effect the drought is having on farmers, but it turns out it's also shrinking the shipping lanes of the Mississippi River. Adam Allington of St. Louis Public Radio reports.
Standing on a river barge south of St. Louis, you can't help but notice that the mighty Mississippi just isn't that mighty right now. In fact, it's about 13 feet below normal.
Right now, you can see 30 feet of sand that you shouldn't be able to see.
Butler Miller is the president of barge operator Robert Miller & Associates. He says the drought of 2012 has put a huge squeeze on his biggest customers, grain and food producers who ship products down to New Orleans for export.
We have 60 to 70% of our equipment idle, just waiting for work. Harvest is due to start in the southern United States maybe in the next 2 weeks. Hopefully we can get some more barges loaded then, but you know, we've had this level of being idle for the last 2 to 3 months.
On top of that, Miller says traffic on the river is restricted to one lane in some areas, and barges can't be filled to their full capacity.
You would like to load a barge 2,200 tons. With these new draft restrictions, it's maybe more like 1,600 tons, you know. Profits are greatly strained.
Don Sweeney is the associate director of the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. While barge traffic only accounts for a tiny fraction of the transportation economy, he says its cargo finds its way into lots of industries.
It's roughly, you know, a $7 to $10 billion industry nationwide. And, you know, in a $14 trillion economy, that's not a big deal. But it is a big deal in the sense that it moves some of the more basic products across the nation.
Sweeney says reduced traffic on the river will likely increase prices on certain raw commodities, such as corn, soybeans, petroleum, and coal. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And finally, what as a consumer annoys you the most? Well, if you're like the rest of us, it's getting duped into buying a new or used car that turns out to be a lemon. That's according to a survey of last year's top 10 consumer complaints from the Consumer Federation of America. Also on the list, fighting with the credit card company over a bill, fighting with the phone, cable, and internet companies over a bill, and fighting with the electric and gas companies over a bill. I sense a theme. We've got the whole list up at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.